This week, the 10-day, $11,350,000 campaign of our United Fund will again focus the attention of every one of our Cleveland citizens upon the social problems of our city. It is altogether fitting that this exercise in conscience take place. For all too often we take the city home in which we live and work for granted. We use its facilities and sometimes we abuse them, but seldom do we pause to make repayment in service or in support. What is it that we will see as we look perceptively at our city at this moment in its history? To look at Cleveland through the perspective of the United Fund is to become acutely aware of the many psychological and financial and educational and moral problems which still distort and disturb the lives of so many of our fellow citizens. Here there is a young child sadly in need of competent psychiatric care. Here is an elderly widow seeking the companionship of other golden agers. Here is a youth group which needs constructive guidance and leisure time activity. Here is a young couple who require the sage wisdom of a marriage counselor. Here a bread earner seeks substance for his family. Here new migrants into our community are searching for adequate shelter for their families. The list, the catalog of human need is infinitely long and infinitely varied. And the 128 social welfare agencies which cooperate in our city to serve this need are doing a true ministry of love. These agencies are supported through our United Fund, and that fund deserves our most generous support. To look at Cleveland through the eyes or the perspective of our United Fund is also to become aware of the concerted effort which has been made and is being made by so many dedicated men and women to make Cleveland a fit and healthy and happy place in which to live. You know, the history of our community is not written in dramatic colors. We've had few climactic political clashes. In a few moments in our history has Cleveland been overwhelmed by all types of upheaval and disturbance. The history of Cleveland is written in stable, sober colors, in the record of persisting, determined efforts on the part of its leading citizens and to make our city a fine place to raise a family, to educate our young, to earn our living, to find our pleasure. To look at Cleveland through the perspective of the United Fund is to become proud of the record of our city in so many areas of social service accomplishment. Cleveland ranks very high in these areas when compared and measured against the other great population centers of our country. Case in point is the record of the very social welfare agencies of which we have been speaking. Just over 40 years ago, the leadership of Cleveland determined to improve the welfare picture as it was being practiced, and they freed the individual agencies of the time-consuming responsibility of individual fundraising, and they coordinated the activities of these agencies so that there would be no unnecessary overlapping in the field. Through the years, the records compiled by many of these agencies have been, if not outstanding, certainly of a high level. Time and again, many of our Cleveland services have been held up as prototypes by other cities and other welfare federations. It is a record of which many in Cleveland take great pride. Now, this is not to say that Cleveland has done all that should have been done for the well-being of its citizens. And this is not to say that even if the current United Fund exceeds, as we pray it will, its quota, all that should be done at this moment in our history for those in need and those in distress will be done. There are still long lists of waiting people at all of our guidance agencies. The recreational and group programs to occupy our leisure time constructively do not begin to cover the field of need. Hundreds upon hundreds of those who require additional material help in order to solve their personal problems are being helped most niggardly. It is unfortunate that the realistic goal of the United Fund must be set not by the realistic figure of the human need of our community, but by a realistic appraisal of the donations and the gifts which our community will give to such a campaign. If more would be given, so much more of good could be accomplished. It is a strange paradox, very disturbing paradox, that even in this, the decade of the greatest material prosperity that our country or any country in the history of the world has ever known, even at this, the high point in our national wealth, the paradox of want amidst plenty, of scarcity amidst satiety, of ignorance amidst information persists. America has been blessed with greater prosperity than any nation in history. And we have done more to diffuse this prosperity into all the levels of our society. Yet in Cleveland, in our own city, you will find men and women who cannot find employment, and many more men and women whose employment is temporary at best. Despite our prosperity, many in Cleveland live in the most abysmal type of substandard slum shelter. Despite the high level of our medical knowledge, which has accomplished in its research miracles in the past several decades, there are those every day in Cleveland who die from diseases which can be prevented and can be cured, who die because they lack the most rudimentary medical care. Despite the growing knowledge which the psychiatric field is bringing to the attention of our people, only 1 in 10 of our citizens who suffer from a mental disease necessitating treatment is at this hour receiving adequate treatment. Now, we have gone far in the last several decades and generations to blunt the edges of this paradox. Our world has come far in sharing its prosperity and its wealth among all of its citizens. But the tragedy remains. This paradox still persists among not insignificant sections of our community. Much is being done. Much more remains to be done. We can be very proud of the extension each year of free clinical medical service to greater areas of our community. We can be proud that under the prodding of our federal government, finally important projects are being undertaken in the fields of slum clearance and in the raising of apartment buildings fit for the working classes. We can be proud that programs are about to be undertaken to provide men and women the wherewithal to keep their older homes in a good state of repair. Wherever there are funds, classrooms are being raised, libraries erected, youth centers constructed. And we can be especially proud of the record of our school system, which faced with a population explosion in the last 20 years, an explosion which has seen 65% more of young people in its classrooms today than 18 years ago, And despite the in-migration of large numbers of young people from less literate areas of our country, has maintained a very high standard of education, one which finds few peers and fewer equals in the suburbs, and has taught not only textbooks but trades, not only studies but skills, and has filled as much as it could the leisure time of the outside of school time of its scholars with constructive, well-conceived programs of activity. Oh, many agencies, many individuals are cooperating in this work of social reconstruction. Indeed, I was amazed when I was told that 100,000 of our men and women, professionals and volunteers alike, had during the past 12 months given a part of their day, a part of their week, or all of their time, the work of social welfare, of teaching and group leading, of guidance and of counseling, to all that ministry of service which is so important for all. But the need remains. The need remains despite our prosperity. Last year, 7,500 boys and girls below the age of 17 were apprehended by our police. Last year, 7,000 boys and girls were involved in the trauma, the breakup of a home. Last year, 1,700 babies were born illegitimately in our community. Last year, less than 25% of those who wanted to be involved in the recreational and guided leisure time activities of Cleveland could be afforded a place in these activities. Last year, some 500 cases of boys and girls who are emotionally disturbed and require competent psychiatric guidance were buried in the waiting lists of our Cleveland agencies. Just 2 weeks ago, one of our own religious school teachers, who teaches also in an elementary public school, told me of mothers who refused at the beginning of their term to send their youngsters to the school because they lacked adequate clothing. Cleveland, 1958, city of great prosperity, city which has achieved greatly for the social well-being of its citizens, but a city which still knows need and want, but a city which must bestir itself the good of its citizens. You know, it's almost inconceivable to some of us that this privation should exist. All about us we see construction, physical growth. Everywhere we turn, in the downtown, in the suburbs, here in the civic center, everywhere we turn there is the expansion of institutions, the establishment of new schools and new churches, the founding of new homes, the buildings of new offices and stores, shopping centers. We are thrilled by the prospect of a gateway and of a seaway. We thrill at the $250 million construction taking place in our own university circle, which promises to give Cleveland the continued presence and enjoyment and use of nationally important educational and religious and medical and cultural institutions. It's inconceivable at this moment, when so many of our citizens are showing their faith in Cleveland's future, those who look carefully at Cleveland's social fabric should be somewhat disturbed by much of what they see. Yet, in all honesty, we must admit that we are disturbed. For just as clothes do not make a man, so the buildings in a city do not guarantee the brightness of its future. Remember Rome. Rome, mistress all the world. Into the coffers of the Roman treasury there poured the wealth exacted from 1,000 provinces and 10,000 cities. The buildings of Rome were built by a munificence never seen before or since in history. Money was no object. The architects had free range in their budgets, and the sculptors and the artists could embellish these buildings to their heart's content. And yet by the second century of Rome's imperial grandeur, it was worth your life to walk unguarded in its cities. The best of its citizens had deserted the city except on the most urgent business. The city was a prisoner of its own mobs, of its own passions, and of its own prejudices, because the city of Rome had done nothing to improve the lot of its lowest and most unfortunate population elements. And Rome, for the last centuries of its existence as capital of the empire, was a city of decay, a dead city amidst the magnificence of its edifices and of its buildings. We think of Rome as we read in our papers of the tragic kidnapping and rape which took place in our own civic cultural center just 2 weeks ago. And we recognize this truth which comes to us through history, that when the streets of a city become unsafe, when the population of a city becomes unruly, the fate of a city is sealed unless action is taken to correct the lack. Cleveland must look, it seems to me, not only to its city planning commissions, but to its police department to find the blueprint of a great future. Every community, urban and suburban, regardless of creed or breed or race or color, has its fringe of lunatics and demented people whose compulsions and whose antics must never be allowed to be expressed at the expense of the population. It is the obligation of the police to protect us from the psychotic eruptions of these people. Fortunately, our police have exerted themselves prodigiously since that tragic morning and have evolved an important and far-seeing program of protection for this area of the community. But if Cleveland's future is to be secure, such a scheme of protection must be extended to every quarter and every street and every block in our city. It must precede the crime and not follow upon its tragedy. But you know, in all honesty, the responsibility for these examples of willful antisocial behavior do not rest entirely upon our police. They rest upon us, upon you and upon me, upon the fears and the prejudices which have so often contorted our civic spirit. Cleveland in the last 10 or 20 years has been the terminus of an important in-migration of migratory workers from the near and the deep south. These workers have come to us lacking in wealth, little baggage, but with a full measure of ignorance, primitive fears, and ancient prejudices. Cleveland would be faced with a prodigious effort at best if only our job was to shelter these people adequately, to educate them into the obligations of urban living, to teach them the ways of the city. But you and I have made that task even more difficult for our agencies and for our schools and for our police. Because you and I have insisted that these new in-migrants must be compacted and compressed into the narrow limits of our city. We have forced them to be put upon and over the homes of those who already lived in sometimes very stable neighborhood areas, because we have denied access into our comfortable suburbs to many of those who live in these more stable neighborhood areas. We have built up dangerously the population density of our city, and it is when the city becomes overpopulated that tension and confusion is bred and violence often erupts. We have built a curtain of zoning restrictions. We have based this curtain upon our prejudices. Unless this curtain is in many ways ruptured and broken, unless we overcome our prejudices and our fears and allow those who have attained a higher standard of living to live among us, unless we do this, there is danger that social unrest may, for the first time in Cleveland's history, become a problem which faces our community. Cleveland's problems are our problems. We do not escape the responsibility for Cleveland's future by having built our homes outside the city limits in Cleveland's suburbs. When an act of violence disturbs our equanimity and violates our sensitivities, it is not the part of wisdom to retreat like the turtle into the antiseptic protection of our suburban homes and to loudly insist that our institutions must build new edifices just around the corner. That is not the way of wisdom, nor is it a realistic way. The great institutions of a city must serve the whole city. The citizens of a city must serve the city. Were we to denude, to devitalize the center of Cleveland from all that makes it a great urban community, we would find that our own lives would be the poorer, our own income the less. We ourselves would be living in turbulent times which we had sought to avoid. For a devitalized central city, a city of overpopulation, a city of overconcentration, a city of inadequate housing, such a city breeds in its street corners crime and delinquency. And those who will to perpetrate crime do not acknowledge the narrowness of the arbitrariness of the city lines. Their crimes can be permitted in the farthest outreaches of our suburbs and exurbs. And if economic dislocation and blight is allowed to creep into our center city, it will not stop at the block at which the city line is drawn. It will inevitably in time cross over like any disease into the neighboring areas and infect those bodies as well as our own. If the center city is devitalized, then it seems to me that everything which makes for the hopefulness of our future will be destroyed. Because it is after all true that in the center of the city, all that is creative, all that makes for the color and the culture, which is the greatness of our city, takes place. It is in the clash of ideas in the marketplace. It is in the study of ideas in the great universities. It is in the interchange of ideas which takes place between the many heterogeneous minority groups of varying traditions who make up a city. It is in that clash, that press and strain and growth, that a city molds its philosophy, determines its future, sets its ideals, and builds its culture. The very word civilization, which represents all that is good and that is positive in our communal life, comes from the same root as city. Etymologically construed means only the culture of a city. For there is an ancient truth in history, and it is this, that all the great empires of the world seem to find their fertility, their seed, in a single city, a city in which were represented the best of their art, the best of their music, the best of their scholars, the best of their thought. Because in the press of that city, in the attraction of the city to the finest minds of the day, in that clash of ideas is the seed of culture. We think of Hellenistic culture as the culture of the whole of the Greek peninsula. And yet it was in Athens, city of no more than 40,000 souls at its greatest. It was in Athens that the best of Greek art, the best of Greek theater, the best of Greek poetry, the best of Greek philosophy, the best of Greek science was developed and displayed to the world. Athens was the magnet which attracted the scholar, which attracted the bright young school lad. It was in Athens' arenas and its academies that the ideas which made for the Greek tradition of philosophy were discussed and debated and deliberated. It was in its temples that its oratory reached a peak. It was in its museums that its sculptors found inspiration and a place to exhibit their creations. And what Athens was to Greece, so Rome was to the whole of the Mediterranean Empire which it ruled. For it was in Rome that the law and the literature of the Roman spirit were forged and were molded. And it was Jerusalem for our own people. There we built our sanctuary. There we found spiritual inspiration. And there we based our millennial hope. It was Vienna to Central Europe. Vienna, the center of music, the center of science. France, the center of Paris, the center of France's art and sensitivity. London, the center of England's politics and theater. These great cities are the catalyst which makes possible the continuing growth of a people's culture, of all that is worthwhile, and a people's future. We must learn, each of us must learn, if we are determined on a grand future, as I think we are for our community. Each of us must learn to live in and to love our great metropolitan city. We must learn to take part in its forums and its debates, to enjoy the cultural opportunities of its museums and its schools and its symphonies, to relish the spiritual knowledge to be gained in its churches and its synagogues. We must learn that the homogeneity of the suburbs is fitting for the amateur. It is a place for rest and for relaxation. It is a fine and deserving place. Sylvan retreats have been the longing, part of the longing of man since time immemorial. But an amateur art, an amateur learning, an amateur religion will not make for the greatness of our city. As the young people flow into our universities, as the young artists seek freedom from the shackles of convention in our artist centers, as the best of our business and legal minds meet in downtown forums and fellowships to debate the problems of the day, there lies our future. I pray that each and every one of us will, in the days ahead, admit to himself his responsibilities to our community and undertake, in whatever way he sees fit, his debt of obligation, his debt to our future. Amen.